What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Successfully Unsigned. On this episode, we had our dear friend Johnston Ellis on the program. He is a lawyer in Nashville, property lawyer. He hopped on. We talked about copyright law, contracts, AI and music, work for hire, collaborations. We hit on a lot of stuff, guys, stuff that you're going to need to know as an artist. So it's crucial that you watch this episode and take as much as you can from it. Leave us comments down below on things that you did learn and things that you did pick up from the episode. Unfortunately, about two-thirds of the way through the episode, my camera's cut out on me, but the episode audio is going to be playing all the way to the end. So you'll have the full audio, but about two-thirds of the way, expect the video to drop off. That being said, it's still an amazing episode. Hope you enjoy it. But as always, you know the drill. Go to our website, su-podcast.com. Follow us everywhere, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. Give us a follow, subscribe, like this video, comment on this video. Rate us 5 stars, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you know the drill. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you on the next one. What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to Successfully Unsigned. I'm your host, DJ Overheat, along with Patty G. And we have our guest for tonight, Mr. Johnston Ellis, ladies and gentlemen. How's it going, y'all? He's finally with us.
Johnston DJ in here.
I know, man. We've been trying to get you in. Thanks for coming, dude.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a long time coming, for sure. Looking fresh, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, he really showed us up.
Yeah, he really did. Yeah. I was like, I'll wear my nice pants. And then he just,
I literally was like, should I wear like a button down shirt? And I was like, nah, I'll go more casual. That's what I usually do.
Isn't that button down though?
It is button down, but it's like Nickelodeon characters.
Yeah, well. Which Nickelodeon has
had a lot of legal issues before. So there we go.
Yeah, it fits.
On theme now.
It fits.
It does. Yeah. There, I came from work, I came from the courthouse, and you're wearing something that could open you up to legal liability. This is perfect.
This is perfect. And I have nothing that, well, I don't know. What do I have on that makes me legally liable? I have no idea. No idea. But obviously, man, we grew up together. I think we had you on the show before. I don't think we've, this is the first time you've been on the show.
It's the first time I've been on this show, but I was on your last podcast.
Last podcast we had you on. Yeah. We did grow up together, though.
We did.
Old Hickory, a small town, population 50 people, with a Piggly Wiggly, a gas station, and a Sonic, and a Regions Bank. A lot more over there now, but I went to the same church, which we both have since departed from, but family's still there, doing good, everything?
My family moved to a different church, same denomination. But different building.
Nice.
They're attending to a church in Mount Juliet now.
Okay, yeah. Seems like everyone's going out there.
A lot of families out there.
Yeah. Seems like that's the place to be, I guess. Well, anyways, man, so we had you on today because we just want to talk about some legal copyright.
Wait, I have one thing before we start. Johnston technically has been on the podcast. One time, I just remembered when you almost fell down the stairs.
That's right.
During the Christmas episode. It was the Christmas episode. Yeah. You were like hanging out at David's. It was you, Dalton, and maybe someone else in there.
Yeah.
And we're all just like talking and we're like, see you, Johnston. And then we all go, because you almost fell down the stairs as you were turning around. Yeah. So Johnston has been behind the scenes before.
That may have been what confused me because I remember hearing. Maybe, didn't you give me my taco? You think you got us Taco Bell or something, too?
I think that was Whitney on another episode, but maybe.
And either way, I'm grateful.
I remember, Patrick, you did some social media thing during David's Christmas party when he was still living in Murfreesboro.
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know. I did not see that because I don't have social media anymore. But if it made it on there, I have been on the social medias.
Okay. That is true.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure you're like in a story clip somewhere from that night.
Probably. That was a great night.
Yeah.
Well, today we're going to be talking about copyright. We're going to be talking about some legal issues that artists may encounter. These are things that may seem a little mundane to some people. I think they're super interesting, personally.
Mm-hmm. I love law stuff, even though I'm not very good at it.
Yeah.
but it's so relevant to you as an artist, and who better to talk about it than Mr. Johnson here. So if you don't mind, just give us your background, what you're doing right now, how you came to be.
Sure. I'm a sixth generation attorney. My dad was an attorney. Is an attorney. My grandfather was an attorney. We've been doing this for, geez, since the 1850s.
Wow.
Yeah. We can't seem to do anything else.
Yeah.
But I went to Cumberland School of Law down in Birmingham, Alabama. It's at Samford University. Mm-hmm. I graduated in 2022, got licensed that same year, November, passed the bar on my first try.
Hey, nice.
Yeah, I know you were really scared about those bar results the first go around.
It's a nightmare taking the bar exam, and then you have to wait for months on end until they finally tell you you passed or you failed.
Yeah. Was there like a lot of pressure from your family to like go into the same sort of thing?
No, there was never any pressure from my family. People growing up kept asking if I was going to be a lawyer like my dad.
Okay.
So I resented that question, and for roughly 10 years or more, I vowed I would never go to law school.
Oh, okay.
And then my senior year of college, my professor tells me that he thought I was the most qualified person he knew to go to law school, and I should go to law school.
Wow.
You couldn't escape it, no matter how hard you try.
Yeah. No, I could not. But those were the best 3 years of my 20s thus far.
Yep. Oh, wow. Yeah.
29 is doing pretty well.
Yeah.
But 24 to 27 is when I was in law school, and those were some great years.
What do you think your hardest year of law school was? I hear mixed things from everybody. Is it first year? Is it last year?
First semester is tough because you're having your brain broken apart so it can be remolded. Mm-hmm. So you have to think a certain way.
That makes sense.
Third year for me was chaotic because I was taking a 17-hour semester and then a 16-hour semester to follow that.
Mm-hmm.
Most people probably would not recommend that, but I had a very light year my second year because it was COVID.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
So I intentionally took a lighter year in COVID, and then I took a heavy year my last year, but it was fruitful because it made me more prepared to take the bar. I had better study habits.
Right.
I was not getting senioritis. So me taking on the full load was preparing me for taking the bar exam, gave me a good work ethic going into the bar exam. And really, my fall 3, I was the best semester I had in law school.
Really?
And it was the hardest one I had at the same time.
Yeah, man. I remember those days for you. It was tough.
I missed a bachelor party that semester.
You missed a bachelor party?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of studying.
So much.
Yeah, my sister and brother-in-law, I feel like it's similar for like doctors and nurses and stuff. I felt like my brother-in-law was never going to be done with like his residency and all that. It's just I don't know. I feel like doctors and lawyers have the same amount of like high tension stress in those years, but I feel like you flew through like law school. I feel like it was like you were going in and then all of a sudden it's like you're done. It's like, wow. I feel like Dale was the same way with his, like,
that's what graduate. I said. He's like, I don't feel like it's gone quick. I'm like, okay, well, you've been in it, but I was like, I feel like you just really started your master's.
Right.
But I guess when you're in it, it's different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now I do criminal defense work exclusively. Mm-hmm. I did do a little trademark and intellectual property before then. I was in private practice. Now I'm doing public work. I work for the state. And I also wrote and published a work on copyright in relation to federalism. It's very nerdy stuff. Very
congratulations,
niche.
By the way.
Yeah, that's really cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Didn't you have another work published?
Another one is currently in the works of being published. I signed that contract almost a year ago.
Okay.
I'm not in any rush, but it did take some of the issues I looked at in the first paper and just built on them.
Right.
So is there a place that people can read that?
Yeah, the first paper, Copyright and Federalism, you can find that on the Northwestern Journal of Technology and Intellectual Property.
Okay.
It's a volume 20, issue 1.
Okay. So nice. Keep that in mind, you artists.
Go read it.
Y'all need it. Y'all need it, for real.
Oh, yeah.
The second one will be published with the Cumberland Law Review. I don't know when, but I'm under contract to have that under volume 54.
Okay.
So
Yeah.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, to start out, I think it's good we probably lay down a foundation of, like, what is copyright law to you? Why is it important that artists know what it is?
All right. And before I start, disclaimer, everyone, this is all educational. It is not legal advice. If you want legal advice, go talk to an attorney.
Yes.
That is your attorney.
Disclaimer.
Yeah. There are ethical reasons for that.
Yeah.
But
usually we'll have like a funny clip from the episode to like start the show. Like it's kind of a teaser. I'll put that instead.
Yeah.
At
yeah.
The very beginning so people know. But thank
also,
you for saying that.
Yeah. Yeah. Also though, just keep in mind, like David said, while you may not think that this applies to you as an artist, like it is literally for you as an artist. And I know, you know, independent artists who have run into these issues, whether it be, you know, your band broke up and now it's like, okay, what belongs to who and everything like that. So different things like that. Like this is really, really good information that we're about to get into.
So copyright is encompassing a lot of things. It's dealing with writings. It deals with the visual arts. Interestingly enough, you don't have to have something published for it to be protected by copyright.
Mm-mm.
So if you wrote a song or a poem right now in a journal and just hid it away, it's protected by copyright.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there might be some state-specific rules. Copyright is one of those weird areas of intellectual property where most of it's federal, so the federal law has edged out a lot of state rules. But there's still some room where the state law can come in and say, we will protect this or we won't allow protections for that.
Okay.
Under state copyright law.
Okay.
But that's the odds of you finding state rules are probably low.
Yeah. So it's not as nuanced between state and federal, right?
No. Okay. There are, the states will, for example, Tennessee has a statute on point where when internet started becoming a big thing and people were using the internet for research, they made sure that the state universities could not be sued for copyright infringement if you're using it for research purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some ways in which the states are looking to protect copyright interests through state law, mainly from protecting people from lawsuits.
Right.
You know, you don't want a student going to the library doing research and next thing you know, they get slapped with an infringement claim from, well, this writer in the Northeast or it's on the West Coast who said that was my piece of work and you used it in this research paper or used it in this class presentation.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there are carve-outs that you can make in copyright through state law, but copyright itself is looking at what is an original work. Is it creative in nature?
Mm-hmm.
Is another thing that a lot of people are going to think of when you think of copyright. A great example of something that you probably wouldn't think would be copyright protected might be Jackson Pollock paintings, where he's just throwing paint all over these canvases.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, it's copyright protected. It's a work of art. It's original work, and you can't make derivatives of that unless you're given permission. It
mm-hmm.
it protects five rights: your right to reproduce the work, to create derivatives of the work, mm-hmm. to display the work.
Yep.
Let's see. The acronym I remember is RDDP. Performance is one.
Yeah.
I'm missing the third D. I can't think of that off the top of my head.
Oh, it's
the derivatives, display, duplicates.
Duplicates.
Right, yeah. To duplicate the work.
Uh-huh.
So printing a new version of a book,
mm-hmm.
that would be a duplication of the work. Those are the five rights that are protected by copyright.
Yeah.
And the reason why we have this is because we don't want people going out there and making money off your own work. The statute has a fair use exemption, and there are two. There, it looks at four things, but two things tend to be the determining factor.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is the impact on the economy. How much money is the original artist really losing?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And that was a big deal in this recent Supreme Court case with the Andy Warhol Foundation versus, I think it was Emma Goldsmith was her last name, or Goldstein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're are you familiar with the Purple Prince at all?
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
So Andy Warhol, the famous pop artist, he got a picture of Prince, and he used his trademark style to create a purple Prince, which is just Prince's face on a purple background.
Mm-hmm.
He had permission to do this from the original photographer, Miss Goldstein. She's the one that took this black and white photo of Prince when he was doing, promotional photography with her. She licensed this this photo out to Warhol to make this painting. He makes this painting. It gets published.
Mm-hmm.
He also made several other paintings. Fast forward, both Prince and Andy Warhol are now dead. But there is now a run of Prince prints. Say that five times fast. And I think it was a Rolling Stone magazine or some music magazine. Now all the other prints that Warhol did are being published. And Goldstein comes back and she sues, saying that there's copyright infringement.
Mm.
Now the fun part about the backroom deal was she just wanted infringement on some of them and was going to allow the Warhol Foundation to keep the rights to the others.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Warhol Foundation got greedy and said, no, we're going to keep all of them. So Goldstein sued for infringement on all of them.
Yeah. So she originally gave them some leeway.
And
they just decided to get greedy.
Yeah. It went all the way to the United States Supreme Court and she won.
Wow.
Yeah. So those other prints, derivatives that Warhol made are now considered infringements on her copyright.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It was too similar.
Yeah.
And what I got to look at some of these paintings when I was in law school, and some of them, there's little pencil sketchings.
Yeah.
Clearly looks a lot like a work that was from the original photo. Like I was just tracing over it.
Yeah.
Others, you had some leeway. You had some argument. So Goldstein was not being unreasonable in that case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think the other one in fair use is like reviewing, critiquing, right?
Yeah.
You're able to do that, like commentary, kind of thing. That's why you see a lot of reactions online that don't get flagged by YouTube, because they're technically reviewing it or critiquing or providing commentary. And so it constitutes fair use, correct?
Yeah. You're allowed to use material for criticism.
Mm-hmm.
In education, you're allowed to make derivatives, make duplicates, so long as it's just for that educational purpose.
Right.
The big thing people are looking for is, how much money am I losing?
Right.
And if you're not losing that much money, you're not going to have much of an issue,
mm-hmm.
Unless you make it one.
Right.
So,
which brings me to my next thing, which is registration of your copyright. How do artists go about doing that, and what are some of the benefits to doing that?
The way you register is you go to the United States Copyright Office. You can do this online. You
can do it online, yeah.
Yeah, that's very important. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I have a registered copyright. When I registered my copyright, I did it exclusively through the online service, and they mm-hmm. mailed me my copyright back.
Yeah.
It's about $70.
Yeah, it's not much at all.
No. Not much. Some copyright attorneys might not like that, but this is for unsigned artists, sirs.
Yeah.
They can't afford you.
True.
Very and also, true. I think a lot of, just to make a distinction out there, being affiliated with a performing rights organization is not the same thing as registering your copyright.
No, it's so not.
Those two things are very different. Is the one is the protection of your work legally, and the other is assuring that you're able to be compensated for your work.
Correct. Which that's what we were talking about on the last interview, correct?
Yes. Yes. Okay. She had brought up like ASCAP, BMI, CSAC.
Okay.
These are all ways to be compensated for your work.
Gotcha.
Through royalties. But registering your copyright is the most important thing, I think, before any of that comes into play.
It is the way to protect all five rights
mm-hmm.
and have proof of it.
Right.
Like I said earlier, you write a poem, you write a song, you put it in a drawer, it's protected, but it's not going to be as protected as if
you register.
You went ahead and registered it.
So if you were involved in something where you felt somebody infringed on your work, you hadn't registered that work. They had registered it, but you created it before them. How does that play out in court?
That's a good question. It would boil down, I think, to who made it first.
Who made it first, not who registered it first. Okay.
The first creation of the copyrighted material is going to be key there.
Yeah.
But
you have to have proof. Yeah.
You have to have proof. If you know for a fact that, hey, I made this copyrighted work, but I didn't register it. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good. Do you have proof that you made it before this guy registered his work?
Yeah. Make digital copies, ladies and gentlemen. Put it in your phone, in your notes, as well as writing it down. It's fun to have it in a journal, but also put it so you can have a date and a timestamp.
Yeah. And one thing, since we were talking about derivatives, I will make a tangent here about music.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to borrow, but be careful how much you borrow.
Yes.
There are plenty of cases that I can think of from famous artists where they borrowed and then another artist comes and says, I think you borrowed a little too much.
Right.
A famous example from the 90s is Come As You Are by Nirvana.
Yeah.
They got sued by Killing Joke. Or I shouldn't say sued. Killing Joke took issue because they thought Come As You Are sounds like 80s.
Yeah.
From the opening guitar notes.
Mm-hmm.
Another band, Spirit, sued Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin. Stairway to Heaven. Yeah, that's a famous one.
But if you listen, if you take Stairway to Heaven and you compare it to The Pretender by Foo Fighters, mm-hmm. you'll notice that some of the same notes are played.
Yep. And rhythm, it's what's worth noting here as well. Rhythmically, I don't believe that there's that same distinction as melodies, right? So if you have a melody that's similar and you have a rhythm that's similar, obviously rhythm is going to get more of the benefit of the doubt than the melody, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
I play drums. How can I copyright? I'm playing straight eighth notes on the hi-hat, and I'm going to keep my bass foot on the one and the three, the snare hits on the two and the four.
Right.
That's rhythm. That's not protected.
No.
If I throw it in another song, if I throw it with other parts.
Yeah.
Now you might have an argument. There's a good documentary called Copyright Criminals where the drummer for James Brown was interviewed. And he was interviewed because a lot of rappers were taking his drum parts and they were sampling them for his songs.
Sampling.
Yeah. So when he would find out, he said, well, now's where I come in and now's the time where we talk about money.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense because if you create more original, I would say that if you're creating more original drum parts, mm-hmm. if you're trying to sample Buddy Rich,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure all his stuff would be in, he died in the 1980s, so it'd probably still be protected by copyright.
Right.
Just to clarify, the current statute is copyright is life plus 70 years.
Life plus 70. Yep.
Yeah. So.
And then it falls into public domain.
And then it falls into public domain. Right. Yeah. That's very important. Is so long as you're alive, you have copyright. After you die, the clock starts to tick.
Yeah. Okay. And kind of touching on sampling again. So with sampling, you know, you hear a lot of songs, a lot of R&B songs, hip-hop mm-hmm. songs that have samples from, like, older music. My question to you is, I know some of those samples are older. Maybe it's public domain, or is a lot of that just they're using the sample to make a derivative work, which makes it different enough to where they cannot be touched by the copyright infringement suit?
I'm not sure how to answer that one.
Well, I feel like...
So I guess I'm not following your question.
So if they're using a sample to make a derivative song, mm-hmm. so it wouldn't be a derivative because it's not using the full song that the sample's from.
Yeah.
If it's using like a vocal line or something and you put it in a hip hop song in like part of a verse or in a chorus, it's encompassing a part of a bigger work, which I guess makes it a derivative work, which is covered under fair use. But I know a lot of those samples too are just like older samples from copyrights that have fallen back into the public domain. So I guess would the former be okay?
If it's in the public domain, you can use it.
Right.
If it's not in the public domain, you should probably be hesitant.
Yeah. And the length of the sample, does that make a difference as far as...
New.
No. Okay.
Now, once you start to sample, you're infringing on, you could be infringing on copyright.
Mm-hmm.
The shortest song in the world is just under, is just over a second long. It is You Suffer by Napalm Death. Four words. It's a grindcore song. I can infringe on that.
Yeah.
All I have to do is sample one part of that song, put it in a song that I'm making, mm-hmm. and bam, it's copyright infringement.
Right.
Why should their song be granted any less protection than, say, one of the 11-minute epics that Tool plays?
Yeah.
No, it's infringement no matter how you cut it.
Right.
So do artists typically just ask permission or pay for it to use? I mean, like you said, especially in hip-hop, samples are used all the time.
You know, license, yeah.
It's best to ask for permission. Two examples. Machine Gun Kelly did a cover of Swing Life Away by Rise Against.
Mm-hmm.
He got their permission before he made that cover.
Mm-hmm.
He writes them a letter. You can read up on it on Wikipedia because that's now a reliable source. another example is the White Stripes. They don't have a bassist, but there was a fan of theirs that really liked their music and he wanted to put bass to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I forget the name of the album that he released, but he decided, I want to add bass to these tunes. He contacts the White Stripes, says, hey, I'm a fan. I would like to add bass to your songs. Do you mind if I do that?
Yeah.
And Jack White and Meg White were okay with it.
Yeah. Okay. What about, like, getting into, I guess, covers? What about just, like, okay, like, I'm just posting covers on YouTube. Is that covered or?
That's derivative, right?
There are some drum covers that I've watched on YouTube where the artists have had to take those songs and make different versions of the tunes so that they avoid the copyright strikes.
Okay.
Because you're still, even if I'm playing that music, and I have covers on YouTube too that have been been stricken by copyright in mm-hmm. other countries, and for good reason, because I'm using the track they have on the album that is protected by copyright and I'm playing over it.
Mm-hmm.
That is a performance of the song. It's not quite as a derivative as it could be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am infringing on some copyrights in some places. In other places, this is more Creative Commons license mm-hmm. where they're allowing the people to use their work. Or it's a smaller time artist, indie artist. In my experience, I've done a lot of indie covers. They don't mind.
Mm.
I've never heard any complaints from them, but maybe they haven't seen my stuff yet because it's so lowly trafficked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So moral of the story, guys, it's best to get permission.
That is very...
It's good practice to get permission. Yeah. But we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some common issues that artists may run into with contracts and also with collaborations and work for hire. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, what's up? It's DJ Patty G. I hope you guys have been enjoying the show so far. If you want to go find more, go to our website, su-podcast.com. We have lots of cool playlists there, whether it be from artists that we've had on the show or with other independent artists from all over the world. Also, make sure to follow us at successfully_unsigned on all of our platforms, as well as Unsigned Podcast on TikTok. You guys will be our best friend if you go rate us 5 stars on all platforms. And if you like and subscribe this video, make sure to keep watching so you can see more of our shenanigans and other tomfoolery. Thanks, guys.
Welcome back, everybody. We are here with Johnston. And segment one, we talked about copyright. What is it? How do you register? Why is it important to have and know about? Segment two, I kind of want to get down into the nitty gritty of some things that you may run into as an artist when you're trying to get your stuff out there or signing agreements or working with others. And the first thing I wanted to ask you about, Johnston, is regarding contracts. What are some mistakes that you've seen people make when either drafting contracts or signing or not properly knowing what to do when it comes to contracts?
Probably the worst thing you can do is not ask questions
yeah.
about what certain terms mean.
Yeah.
If you don't know what a term means in a contract and you don't ask, that's on you.
Yeah.
You didn't ask any questions about what it means. You shouldn't have asked what it meant. Some people sign contracts without getting lawyers. We're not just here to help you in the courtroom.
Yeah.
There are transactional attorneys. My dad does wills. He does contracts. He's had to read them. I've seen lease agreements where people are signing themselves away for a year, not knowing that it's going to be impossible for them to get out if they want to breach early.
Yeah.
People buying trucks, not knowing what certain clauses mean because they did not get a lawyer to look over this thing when they were buying it, or they didn't ask any questions.
Yeah.
And the same would hold true for any kind of contract you're signing in the music industry. If you're looking over your contract and you're not sure what you're signing, that's a sign for you to hold your pen.
Yeah.
Don't put it down. Don't dot your I's and cross your T's. Just hold the pen, put it in your pocket, and say, I want to take some time to think about this.
Yeah.
I want to take it to someone and consult with them. What do these terms mean?
Yeah. We always reference her interview, but we had Anastasia Elliott on. Go follow her. And she told us that she negotiated a contract for, what, 8 months?
9 months.
9 months. And yep. She still didn't agree to it, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, these things take...
Her dad's an entertainment lawyer. Yeah. So... He knows his stuff.
Yeah. The contracts, they require you to have an agreement between both parties.
Yeah.
There has to be something that's being exchanged. That's called the consideration. Mm-hmm. But then, and the thing everyone thinks about when there's a contract is you were offered something.
Yeah.
I was offered something. I can accept it, right? Yeah, you can accept it. But be careful.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know what you're accepting, you could... set yourself up for a large fall.
Yeah.
You could really hurt yourself. There was one Nashville attorney that I know of, she has since passed away, who signed her rights to her songs away. And those songs eventually started making a lot of money later down the line. Oh, she didn't see a cent of it.
That's awful.
Yeah.
That's a terrible feeling. So I guess my question now is, artists who are looking for a lawyer, an entertainment lawyer, what are some qualities you think are good in a good lawyer, I should say, like for that specifically?
Any good lawyer is going to be a good problem solver.
Yeah.
The same lawyer is going to want you to tell them the truth. The worst thing you can do to your lawyer is lie to them.
Yeah.
There's a saying that a good lawyer can handle anything but a lie.
Yeah.
The moment you start lying to your lawyer, or you're not telling them everything, or maybe there's something, well, I'm embarrassed by this thing, I don't want to tell them. Well, do you think it could come up later and hurt you in the negotiation? Then you better tell your lawyer.
Yeah.
Because we can't say anything.
Right.
The moment I hear stuff, it's tight-lipped.
Yeah. I guess, you know, with some of these bigger labels, most of the deals are 360 deals. I'm not sure if you've heard about those in depth or not.
I've not heard of 360 deals before.
Yeah, I think from my rusty knowledge, it's basically that type of deal. The label owns most everything. And you see a lot up front, but on the back end, it's more the label.
Mm-hmm.
What are some signs in contracts, different types of language that could trip people up when reading throughout clauses, anything like that, that could cause people issues when agreeing to something like that?
Worst thing is the forum selection clause, and what that means, or the choice of law clause. These are two clauses that would really hurt your contract, because the people who are drafting those contracts, the reason why they're choosing the forum, which is where the suit can be litigated, mm-hmm. or the law, which is the law that you're agreeing to subject your contract under.
Yeah.
Usually it's because that law is going to be more favorable to them.
Mm.
There are 50 states in this country with a few other territories, and every state is different. 49 of them use English law. One of them uses French law. I'm not going to name any names, Louisiana. But so 49 states get it right, and one is weird.
Yeah.
And because 49 get it right and one is weird, you don't really have a solid uniformity in, mm-hmm. in law. You have the universal commercial code. You have the UCC.
Yeah.
But that is just a guideline. It's not law itself. It's yeah. something that can persuade a court. The states get to determine how contract law is going to be conducted.
Yeah.
So state by state, you have to be mindful of, okay, I'm signing a contract in Tennessee to be with this label, and they want the laws of California to govern the copyright matters. Or in that case, it'd be the rules in the Ninth Circuit, because the Ninth Circuit has different rules from the Second Circuit.
Right.
It's really weird.
Yeah. So it's you should be vigilant of like what state you're signing in, like state yeah. copyright, or not copyright, state contract
yeah, the laws. And the state laws and the forum
okay.
are the two biggest ones that you should look out for.
Right. Okay. So, you know, I'm trying to think where I was going to go with that. I literally just had it. It left me. I forgot.
This is what happens when you talk law stuff.
I know. Yeah. It's just, you just get on different trains of thought. Yeah. The 360 is the one I've heard the most about. But that is a good point. I didn't think about different states having different laws like that. So I guess, you know, moving on from that, working with people also happens in music, collaborations. Assuming you're not just going to be making music by your lonesome, you'll inevitably come to a period where you have to collaborate with somebody. I noticed there are a lot of people who don't know the difference between collaborations and work for hire. Do you mind explaining that briefly
sure.
for people who don't understand?
So a work for hire is, that's a work where someone is paying you to produce something for them, for their business. An example would be the New York Times is hiring a freelance writer and saying, we want you to write this article for us.
Yeah.
That would be a work for hire. Those works last for 95 years. The copyright is 95 years long.
Mm-hmm.
It does not matter how long the original author lived.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, within 95 years, if you're a 20-year-old author, and if you live past 95 years, you've got some good genes in you.
Yeah.
But a collaboration that goes to co-authorship.
Mm-hmm.
You are getting together with another person. You're coming together to make a work yourselves. Mm-hmm. There are various ways in which to think about collaborations. One, a joint venture is one where you're coming together. We're going to make money off this song together. So we're going to write it together.
Yeah.
There are various ways you can think of it in terms of real property law, which we won't get into. But those works, the life plus 70 rule still applies. Mm-hmm. However, now, now what happens is it will pass into the plus 70 mm-hmm. after the last person who co-wrote it dies.
The last person who co-wrote it. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you and I got together and wrote a song today mm-hmm. and 5 years later I die, the copyright has not passed from me and then into plus 70 yet. It's going to continue for your lifetime and then plus 70 after you die.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Sweet. Wow.
Yeah. I'll still get to collect some, my estate will get to collect some royalties, I'm sure.
Yeah.
There's going to be some working out there.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that people might mm-hmm. not consider when it comes to copyright is you're still making money.
Yeah.
Even after you die.
And I think it's also worth mentioning there are two types of rights when it comes to songs. There's the publishing, which I, from my understanding, deals with more of the song lyrics and the actual writing of the song. And then there's the sound recording, which is the audio file, sound wave element of it. And I know labels deal more with that element. And then the publishing companies deal more with the songwriting element. I say that to say, I know I've used a lot of distribution sites like CD Baby. I think DistroKid also is a distribution site that you can use. They ask you when you do your song, how much of this did you write? Did you collaborate with somebody? How much of the lyrics did you write with this person? And you give an actual percentage. So real quick, like looking ahead to a possible dispute with a person you write a song with. Let's say you write a song with somebody. You say, okay, I wrote two choruses and then you wrote two verses. So it'd be 50-50, right? Mm-hmm. Would it be best to put that in writing yourselves, amongst yourselves, to have a contract between the two of you so that in case somebody were to get upset later on if the song becomes successful, would that be a good way to cover your bases, or would that even really hold up? Because I know a lot of those things, you need like a third party there to like witness, or am I totally off base here on that?
It is always wise to get it in writing.
Yeah.
If you don't have it in writing, you just have a handshake agreement, then it gets messy. There are rules in contract that allow for oral statements to come in.
Yeah.
But contract law is looking at the four corners of the document. So what is in writing? What are we looking at is what the court's going to be more concerned about. If you come in saying, I said this and Bob over there said that, well, now it's just a spitting contest between you and Bob.
Yeah.
Between myself and Bob. And the court's just going to scratch its head and it's going to make the most equitable ruling it can think of. Yeah. Or it's going to throw the case out saying there's no contract here. You guys didn't agree to anything. You just had a handshake agreement. Well, that actually might not be true. There,
it's a he said, yeah. She said.
It's a he said, she, yeah. There is a statute. They call it the statute of frauds, mm-hmm. that would help determine whether or not it has to be in writing. So if it were marriage contracts are one. Land contracts for the sale of land. But one is if there's work to be done beyond a year.
Yeah.
So if you guys agreed, we're going to work on a song within 8 months, mm-hmm. and then there is a dispute there that, well, Ted and Amy are going to work on a song. They said we're going to work on this for 8 months and we're going to publish it.
Yeah.
And Ted says, I want to back out. Well, you don't need a writing for that.
Yeah.
But if they say we're going to do this within 2 years, you need a writing for that.
Yeah.
Because now, or at least I would argue that, because it's labor that you're both putting into a song together and it's beyond a year. It's over a year old.
Okay.
I have two questions. Number one, so what he was saying about like audio files and you were saying about work for hire. So when it comes to getting a producer, mixer, whatever, does that person own anything part of the song, or they work for hire?
People who are working on songs for you, they mm-hmm. get credits. This is why you have that long list.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here were the producers of this song. Here's you play on that side. I don't know if they'd be work for hires, but they will get a cut of the royalties. Because they still did some work on it, so they're entitled to get paid.
Right.
Butch Vig has platinum albums, one of which is from when he cut Nirvana's Nevermind album.
Okay.
So you bet Butch Vig is still making money off the Nevermind releases 30 years later.
Then what about you were saying with writing? So does that also include any, I guess, melody? Yeah, like
songwriters.
If us three were in a band, I wrote the lyrics, you did the drums, he did the guitar, and you wrote the guitar part, you wrote the drums part, and then I was the one who was just wrote the lyrics, and we break up as a band. Like, how does that work?
The band was the venture.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever money is going towards that band is going to be distributed to us as part of that venture.
Okay.
That's the way I would view it. Of course, in law, there's a lot of room for argument.
Yeah.
And this is why it is important to have a contract.
Yeah.
Because if we had a contract, then we could stipulate what happens if the band breaks up.
Okay.
You can contract around that. If the band breaks up, who gets what?
Gotcha.
Meanwhile, if it's just a joint venture and the venture is dissolved, but we're still making money through sale of records, there's room to argue that we're each entitled to a third because we all came together to make money in this venture.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the enterprise has since ended, we were going our separate ways, the fruits of that enterprise are still generating revenue. this is why you see some bands, they'll break up, but they're still selling records.
Mm-hmm.
Famous bands like Soundgarden went through years between the late 90s to when they came back in the early 2010s. They're still selling Super Unknown. They're still selling Bad Motorfinger. Those albums are still generating some kind of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So I would venture to say that they would still, that they were still making money. If not, maybe there was a contract there, or maybe it's just that my legal analysis is wrong, which could be the case.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Nice. Well, I think, you know, we've hit contracts. I feel like we've let the people know what is copyright law, like, what do we do right now? How do we cover our bases for the future? I kind of wanted to touch on the future of, like, AI and all of this, because it's sort of thrown a wrench into some things. I don't know if you guys have been on, like, Instagram or whatever, and there are these ads for, like, you sing a song, and it, like, takes your voice and it makes, like, a country version or of, like, a famous song. Not your song, but, like, a popular song.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wanted to share a case with you real quick. This one is one of the major ones, and it's really the first of its kind with AI right now. It's Universal Music Group and Warner Music Group versus Suno AI. And they're suing them for alleged copyright, accusing them of replicating their artist's music using AI technology. Let's see. The RIAA, which is Warner's side, is asking for damages of up to $150,000 per infringed song, which, yeah, could amount to hundreds of millions. A little bit from Suno's perspective. So if you don't know, Suno and Adeo are text-to-music AI generators, I can't talk, which allow users to create full-length songs with instrumentation and lyrics based on what their user inputs into the program. So a couple key takeaways from this, you know, a group of major, let's see, the lawsuit is the first of its kind against a generative AI program, as opposed to pending lawsuits targeting text and image generation, which that's creepy too. I don't know if you've seen some of those, like the image generators.
I've seen, like,
you literally put it in a description and it paints a super realistic picture. It's so creepy. But I feel like the music is, that gets into a different territory.
It does. The interesting thing about AI is, it's not a person, it's a tool.
Yeah.
We just call it an artificial intelligence because it can in some way can interact with us. I've seen videos where people are having conversations with AI.
Yeah.
There are apps where you can talk with AI. It's really interesting and really weird at the same time.
It's so weird, dude.
On Snapchat?
Snapchat.
I hate that one. It scares me.
It's so scary. And it's like, some of the questions are predictable, but there are some of them where you're like, how did you know that? It's like,
but
very creepy.
What they should really be focusing on are the users of this technology.
Yeah.
Because the users are the ones who are saying, I would like to create this product using AI. So they're the ones generating the duplication or the reproduction. They're making the performance. They're the ones that are infringing.
Yeah.
The reason why I think the company isn't focusing on the users is because the average user is not a deep pocket.
Yeah.
The deep pocket is the company that's making the AI software that's allowing for this infringement.
Right. So they got to go where the money is.
They have to go where the money is.
So you're of the opinion that, you know, the software isn't what's doing most of the heavy lifting. As far as the infringement goes, it's the people who are telling the software what to do.
Right.
Gotcha.
There might be some room to argue that the way AI is set up to pull information from various sources that are out there on the interwebs. So people are saying, I want this kind of song with this kind of voice.
Yeah.
And AI go and do that for me. So the AI is going to go in, to the internet. It's going to pull what it can, and then it's going to create products based on that information, based on the input.
Yeah.
And you could, and what you could argue is, because the AI is designed to pull from copyrighted material, the company has made something that's designed to engage in copyright infringement.
Mm.
That could be a line of argument that might be successful.
I believe they will be successful. And I believe copyright laws will be stricter on them as a result of that.
It is. AI has shaken up a lot of things in the legal field. Tennessee passed the Elvis Act recently. And what that does is it makes it an A misdemeanor, which means you can do upwards to 11 months and 29 days in jail for appropriating someone's right of publicity. So if I decided to use AI what would Willie Nelson sound like if he were in a screamo band? Like, what does Willie Nelson mixed with Whitechapel sound like? That is probably illegal in the state of Tennessee now.
Yeah, like the image and likeness. Yeah.
Yes.
That's so interesting.
Using Cardi B's voice to do like a Foo Fighters cover on AI. Exactly. Yeah.
That's so interesting. Because I've seen AI covers on TikTok all the time, just like Lana, Ariana, like just huge pop stars.
Yeah. And that gets to a little thought about thing in entertainment law is the right of publicity.
Mm.
And for good reason, because right of publicity is not federally protected. It is state specific. In Tennessee, it is a property right. So Elvis, the Elvis estate, there's interest in what Elvis looks like. So people are going to want to protect that. If Keith Urban lives in Tennessee, so he has a right of publicity. These are things that are protected. So one of the reasons why I think the Elvis Act passed is to make sure that this is a property right that is protected by statute, up to the point of putting people in jail.
Wow.
So theoretically, if somebody played a show with their band and they dressed as Elvis or dressed as Keith Urban,
the two,
that'd be a no-no? Or is that...
That would probably depend, because you have Elvis impersonators in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Las Vegas has a right of publicity statute too, because it's so big in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
And Elvis was a Las Vegas singer for the longest time, near the end of his career. Mm-hmm. What would be a no-no is, think of bands like Slipknot, where they have a certain appearance. Clown is one of their drummers, so he goes up wearing a clown mask. If a band decided we're going to dress up like Slipknot and play Slipknot songs,
yeah,
that might be a no-no. Kiss, you're going to use the Kiss face paint, the Star Child face paint, but the Demon face paint, we're going to use that, but we're going to play original songs. That's probably going to be a no-no. You're infringing on their right of publicity. So Kiss, Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons are going to bring down the hammer and say, that was our makeup and you can't use that.
Mm.
Get rid of it.
Right.
They'll probably be nice and write a cease and desist letter before they bring the lawyers.
That nice little cease and desist letter. You know, just a little appetizer before the main course of, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Let me real quick just read some of Suno's arguments in response to this. Suno is claiming one of the things they're doing to prevent the copyright infringement is you cannot upload lyrics to existing songs unless the copyright owner of those existing lyrics says okay, or you get explicit permission from the copyright owner of the existing lyrics into Suno. Let's see. The law regarding copyright protection over AI-generated works is complex and constantly changing, and the law may vary by jurisdiction. According to their policy, they explicitly forbid the use of copyrighted material and any other third-party intellectual property to generate content using Suno. RIA acknowledges that there is both promise and peril with AI, but contends that Suno has overstepped the permissible bounds of copyright while training its AI engine. If developed irresponsible, without regard for fundamental copyright protections, those same tools threaten enduring and irreparable harm to recording artists, record labels, and the music industry, inevitably reducing the quality of new music available to customers and diminishing our shared culture. So what do you think of the whole, like, they're not using, they're saying, okay, we're not letting them use copyrighted lyrics to feed into the engine. Obviously that makes a difference because that's gets into the publishing part of this. But what do you think about that sort of counter argument to that?
I don't think it matters what you're disallowing to be input into the generator. What matters is what the generator pulling from. Mm. So if the AI is pulling from copyrighted material,
yes,
that is where the infringement comes in.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter that, well, I want to see what Smells Like Teen Spirit would sound like if it were written by Taylor Swift. What would that sound like? And I'm going to type in all the lyrics. Well, that does not matter.
Yeah.
What matters is I'm going to type in some lyrics. I'm going to ask, what's it sound like if it's sung by this individual? Mm-hmm. And maybe the AI completes the song by pulling lyrics from other songs.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a line that, oh, you have these five words. Here are five words, AI. Make a song using these five words in the voice of Usher.
Yeah.
AI goes out. AI pulls some songs from Usher. Mm-hmm. Usher sounds like this. Takes a few lines from Usher's songs. Puts it into the original song.
Yeah.
Well, now AI has infringed on Usher.
Yeah. Even they're maintaining certain cadences, but they're trying to change the like archetype of the song and trying to kind of get away with it in that way. Yeah. And honestly, that was my first thought upon stumbling on any of those ads. Cause you can get the apps that do that. And I'm like, it sounds too much like it, you know? And it's obviously perfect pitch too. It's like, there's no, you know, no wrong notes in any of these AI generators ever. So
I want to give a shout out to the Disney Channel original movie Pixel Perfect. Starring, it's like some, I feel like it's kind of underground Disney Channel movie, but it was starring the guy who played Phil of the Future and some blonde girl, and she was a robot. And I remember the only thing I remember about that movie is she made a song because she like discovered music.
Oh, yeah.
And
that movie was creepy, low-key.
I need to rewatch it because it's seriously, I don't think I've seen it since came out. But she made a song and he was like, this is just a bunch of different lines from different songs and you've compiled together. Like, yes, it's an original song, but it's lyrics from every other song.
Oh, my goodness.
So, fun little example. They predicted this. They predicted this.
Yeah. Was that like 04? That
movie? I think so.
Whew. That it really was Phil of the Future, I guess. Wow. And you know, I don't know if you've heard about all this stuff with TikTok and UGM as well, or UMG. Like, basically, you know, TikTok has become so huge. And a lot of the profit comes from the music that's on TikTok. And a lot of that's UMG's music. Mm-hmm. And as far as the rates, you know, are concerned, they're not, I guess, to UMG's liking for the artist, on behalf of the artist. And so that's, I think, why they went ahead and sued TikTok or pulled their music from
the platform. Yeah, they took all their music off. And so any, like, I had videos on there and it took the music off. But if I had, like, I had a song that had a Lana Del Rey song with it and she's under UMG and I had a voiceover in it, and it took off both my voiceover and the song. Mm-hmm. And since then, they have come to an agreement and
put it back.
Yes, right. And put the music back. But all those videos that got the songs taken off, you can't get your voiceover back or anything.
Well, it's like I can see TikTok's. I can see where the initial frustration came from of like, the music's gone. What are you doing? Stop being stupid. then I can see UMG's perspective. Yeah. Of like,
TikTok's, I get it, but also like it messes with creators.
Like, come on, that's my video, man. Yeah. I'm kidding. But I can see the other side of the aisle of like, it's a business thing, right? Like TikTok's becoming more and more profitable. They want in on some of that action. But a counter argument would be, like you said, like a lot of the bigger artists are making revenue from other ways, like live, merch, all of that. Mm-hmm. And so, like, what are your thoughts on that as far as like, should labels have the right to kind of keep up with what the markets are doing as far as what's more profitable here, deserves more money here, or more of an agreement on that end? Or what's your perspective there?
That sounds like an economics question.
Yeah. Wasn't that your minor? No, I'm kidding. No, but it's just all interesting as far as the music industry, because once you get into the money, man, it's just, it's a whole new world. For yeah, sure.
And the internet and the digital age have made not just copyright, but all things intellectual property blow up and become a Wild West setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are so connected now. It's easier to gain access to certain songs. It's easier to search your trademarks.
Yeah.
Easier to search for, oh, I don't know, finding patented inventions to see if, can I do this? Or is it something that someone else has already done?
Yes.
Yeah, which people, there are musicians. Van Halen has a patent on his guitar.
Yeah. Prince had one for his too. Yeah. And I think he had a suit back when he was alive. Like he had some kind of suit for the guitar he played on stage. It may have been somebody else's that he played in. They sued him or something. But yeah, it's, you got to do your research now. It's like everything is.
I probably should have asked this more toward the beginning, but what is the difference? I've heard before, but I don't remember. What is the difference between copyright and trademark?
So copyright, it's looking exclusively at what can be, like what you're producing, what are you creating to be put out there. Trademark is more like, this is the label. This is how we're going to advertise ourselves. This is our brand.
Okay. Okay. So in like music terms, like.
That would be your name.
Okay.
That's the most obvious, what your band name is.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And people change their band names because there's some trademark infringement.
Oh, okay.
Perfect example. One of my favorite bands is Dinosaur Jr. They started in the 1980s. And when they started in the 1980s, they were playing under the name Dinosaur. There was a band called Dinosaur that was already playing shows at that time. It was a super group. And they wrote a cease and desist letter to Dinosaur Jr. and said, you can't use the name Dinosaur. You have to change it. So Dinosaur said, we're going to put Junior at the end of it. And they, all right. Now Dinosaur Jr. is born, and they've been playing ever since.
That's amazing. Yeah. Wow.
It's just the nuances, and we're waiting on our cease and desist letter for Successfully Unsigned, which I checked, and there's not.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think there's like one. It's like
unsigned.
I think it's like Successfully Unemployed or something, which maybe I need to listen to that.
I will say, it's easier to get away with making trademarks that are distinguishable than it is with making copyrights that are distinguishable.
Yeah.
That there's a lot of leeway in trademark. Some of the same issues still apply, such as money and effect on the market, likelihood of confusion. Mm-hmm. How likely are you to think that the band you're listening to here is the same band that you were listening to when you bought the album?
Yeah.
So you know, going back to Dinosaur, I don't know that Dinosaur, the indie band, is not Dinosaur, the supergroup. I have to find a way to distinct that.
Yeah.
So what about using like someone's likeness? Where does that fall under?
Likeness is under right of publicity. NIL is all right of publicity, and it's starting to blow up, especially in sports.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. College players are getting paid now, like college football players, because college football is huge, especially in the South. And like quarterbacks now in college are making like millions of dollars, because that was the whole thing. Was should we pay these players that are under NCAA statutes, and it's blowing up and they're getting like sponsorships with like like Taco Bell, or just you'll see them in commercials now and everything. So name, image, and likeness is, like you said, it's blowing up like crazy in sports right now.
Yeah. And if you're putting yourself out there as a public figure, if you're making yourself known to the public, you have more of an interest in your name, image, and likeness. Vanna White once sued Samsung over them using her likeness to advertise some of their product in, I think, the 1990s.
I do actually remember that case from my media law class.
Ooh, yeah, it's interesting. So the Vanna White robot, that's infringing on her right of publicity, and now you got to pay Vanna White money. That's where your appearance, how are you going to make your stage presence known? You can protect that. Mm-hmm. Again, Kiss's face paint is protected, and it would be protected under what is now considered NIL. Back then, it was just a right of publicity or privacy right.
Gotcha. Okay.
Wow, we've covered quite a bit here. I do want to ask you, though, if there's any cautionary tales that you want to share with the audience is to help them along their journey to make the right decisions for them.
Yes. I do have a cautionary tale because I listened to your interview with Hello Darling.
And shout out to Hello Darling. Go watch it.
They had a great show when they were here. I have to say, they talked about house shows.
We talked about this actually on our last interview with Swift Artists. And so I'm interested to see what you said.
So, well, tell me, what did they say about house shows? Did they say they are good
So
things?
They were talking about what was the thing that, like BMI and stuff like that, like your performance.
It's more on the royalty side of it. Like if you perform at your house and you document that, you could make money. Or you're not supposed to do that because then that looks bad or something. It's like for taxes or something at the end of the year. It just doesn't look good.
Well, a cautionary tale for anyone who wants to do house shows is that these are pits for legal liability. You really don't understand how much legal liability you could open yourself up to at a house show. But we take that, we might take that for granted because you're there just to watch the artist.
Mm-hmm.
But perfect example, when I was in college, we had a band, Rainy. They were good. They were a good dance rock band. Their last show was in the house that the band rented out. So we all crowd into the living room. We have the band that's playing in what is their dining room. They have their amps on the wall. At 21, 22, I'm not thinking about how much legal trouble there is by us being crowded inside this house, and I can feel the floor of the living room going up and down and up and down and up and down as people are jumping up and down. They're pogoing to Rainy. I'm not thinking about how there's a keg in the backyard where they're serving alcohol to people. This changed when I went to law school because you're serving alcohol. Well, if you overserve people with alcohol, there are laws that can open you up to liability if they get in a car wreck. You have invited these people into your house. Are you taking money from them? If you are, then you have to make sure, then you have a duty to make sure that your premises is safe for them. It's premises liability. And it's strict. Slip and fall cases in grocery stores are the result of what they call invitee rules. Now, premises issues are state specific, which, again, everyone, this was not legal advice. This is all educational. Talk to the lawyer of your state. I am just here to educate on what I know. But premises laws are, you know, very state specific. Some people they blur the lines between what's called a licensee, which is what we are right now in David's house, and an invitee where it's a business purpose. You are going in there. This person is making a they're patronizing your business. So you owe a higher duty to an invitee than you do a licensee. Some states blur that line where a licensee and an invitee are the same thing.
Yeah.
Some of the more professional venues where they have stages, some of them won't allow stage diving. Perfect Dichotomy in Nashville was the End on Elston Street. You can stage dive. The exit in at Ellison Street, you can't stage dive.
Oh, yeah. And I was just over there. They're right across from each other.
Yeah, they are right across from each other. And the reason why, well, if someone jumps off the stage and they get hurt, the business is liable.
Yeah.
You didn't make this premises safe. You didn't idiot-proof the business. So House shows are fun, but they're such a pit for legal liability if something goes wrong.
Yeah.
Especially if it's your house.
I was going to ask, did you watch our Christian Hannah interview?
Yeah.
I don't know if I did or not.
You should. You should. Have and you let us know what room? You think.
The Laundry Room in Murfreesboro? Did you ever come watch a show there?
I did come. I saw you play at the Laundry Room.
Yeah. So he runs the company out of that house.
Yeah.
And so I know he never has alcohol on premises.
Smart man.
Or like for any of the shows I've been to.
I think there's been shows where it's like BYOB.
Is it? Okay.
I think
every show I've been to there, he's like, have some water. Like it's never, you know.
If you're serving alcohol, it's that's where you get into the drop shop laws.
Yeah.
Also,
I don't think he's ever served it. I think it's always been BYOB.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
Also, you have to have liquor licenses to sell alcohol in a establishment. So that's probably also why he probably doesn't sell anything. But regardless, the fact that he does not sell alcohol, I would think that would keep him from being liable. People bring their own booze. Well, now they're coming at their own risk with booze in hand.
Right. And as far as neighbors are concerned, like what could potential obstacles be there?
That depends on the codes of your area. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you're in a spot, like if you're playing in a barn in Greenbrier, Tennessee, you could probably probably make a lot of noise. It's very country out there. People are spread out. But the Hyman House on Hyman Street, I don't think it's there anymore. You're more clustered together. You've got one house on one side, another house on the other side. You got church across the street.
Yeah.
Being loud there, you might get the cops called on you because you're in downtown Nashville. You're playing loud music 2 a.m. No
good. Yeah.
Yeah. That could go against the codes of the area.
Yeah.
Which is why it's not only important to check your state laws, but check your county codes. See what the county says.
Yeah.
So if I run like a house venue, is it wrong to charge people for shows?
It's not wrong. Just understand that if something's going to happen to them, well, then you better hope and pray they're not going to sue you to get the money.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, oh,
that's so interesting. I never thought about that because you're right. You're like, oh, I'm here like to have fun and like go to a house show. Like, and house shows are really intimate and have a really cool vibe about them. But yeah I never thought about all the probably legal things.
That's why usually the person who's hosting the party is always the most sober person there.
Yeah,
because it's like, don't do that. Don't do this. Don't do that. Like it's you gotta be careful.
If something happens, well. That's how people like me get paid.
I can see that. I can see that. Well, is there anything else before we go to our last segment that you think would be beneficial for our listeners?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head other than what I just shared with premises. So because premises is really the one thing I think that most people would overlook.
Right.
I took it for granted when I was going to shows, and I am certain that everyone else takes it for granted even when they put on shows.
Yeah. That's good stuff, Jonathan. Thank you so much, man. So we are going to take one last break. We're going to come on back, and we're going to do our show and yell, and then we're going to play a little game. So we'll be right back.
Hey guys, what's up? It's DJ Patty G. I hope you guys have been enjoying the show so far. If you want to go find more, go to our website, su-podcast.com. We have lots of cool playlists there, whether it be from artists that we've had on the show or with other independent artists from all over the world. Also, make sure to follow us at successfully_unsigned on all of our platforms, as well as Unsigned Podcast on TikTok. You guys will be our best friend if you go rate us 5 stars on all platforms. And if you like and subscribe this video, make sure to keep watching so you can see more of our shenanigans and other tomfoolery. Thanks, guys.
Welcome back to Successfully Unsigned. We have Johnston here with us. It's been a great, very informative episode. I've learned a lot. I feel like Patty G's learned a lot.
I've learned a lot.
Hope you guys have learned a lot. We're going to wrap it up the way we always do. Show and yell. So, Johnston, my question to you is, what is your item for today that you've brought for us?
My item.
You gotta yell it. Not like ah, but just like no, no. You know.
All right.
Ready?
Yeah. One, two. My item are my miraculous medals.
I'll allow it.
Yeah.
Let me use the radio voice now to describe what I brought to you for show and yell.
Good morning.
Sound like Dale.
Yeah, a little bit. So what are these medals?
So these were a gift from my friend, Corey. He's currently in seminary out in California. Mm-hmm. They are medals of St. Joseph, and this is... There are two saints on the side. One is St. Monica. The other is St. Augustine. St. Augustine was my confirmation saint when I became Catholic, and I rarely take this off.
Yeah.
So it's something that's near and dear to my heart, not just because these medals were blessed by a priest in Birmingham, and these saints have been very important for me in praying in my life.
Yeah.
But also because there's some sentimental value with their gift from a dear friend of mine.
Nice.
So.
Very cool. Can I see them a little bit closer?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not as big as some other items might be.
Yesterday we had a huge one.
Yeah.
One of our biggest.
Let me see.
So yeah, cool. And they're very worn, so you can see where the metal started to oxidize a bit.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful, though.
Thank you.
I need some jewelry, dude.
I got a new medal when I was in Paris, one for a guardian angel, and when my girlfriend's priest came to town July 4th, I asked him to bless that medal. It's currently at her house because we need a ring for that.
Yeah.
The chain. So.
The chain. There it is. It's the bling.
I'll make you a chicken nugget necklace. It won't have Please. As much spiritual value, but...
I was thinking about getting a necklace, like one of those gold chains, but then I looked at how much they were. I was like, why, though?
You see, hit up Claire's.
Is it at Claire's?
Yeah.
I don't want to go in like Jared or Zales just for that. You know what I mean? That's where you have to go. You have to go or Zales, and they're like, you want to buy a ring? And I'm like, no, actually, just a necklace.
Claire's probably has like a $5 option.
Yeah. Claire's is cute. If I wanted a purple one.
Yeah.
I think Corey got this chain from the cathedral gift shop where he bought the medals.
Yeah.
So, and actually the chain came with the St. Joseph medal. So that this part is all original, and then we had to hook the St. Augustine, St. Monica medal on ourselves.
Oh, nice. Well, sweet. Yeah. Well, guys, we have one more thing to do, and that is a little game. And, you know... I did have a game in mind that we could play, but it would have been infringing a copyright of songs.
So, ironically.
Yeah. I had like planned for that game and I'm like, it's going to be so fun. And then I'm like, hold on. Can't use those. So hold on. I need to get my phone.
There we go.
Okay, gentlemen. We will be playing a game called What's That Sound? And you guys will be competing against each other.
Oh, I'm scared now.
Yeah. And I will play a series of sounds. They will come three at a time. There are four different groupings, so 12 sounds total. I'll play them for Johnston first. You'll have two opportunities to hear the sound. You will then have to tell me what the sound is, the action that's being performed. If you get, you know... just what the sound is, you'll get a point. If you get the action that's being performed as well, making the sound, you will also receive another point. If you don't know one, Patrick, you will have an opportunity to steal.
Okay.
And so you have an opportunity to get an additional point. There's some of these sounds are like easy, and then there are some that are like...
And they're just random sounds?
They're random sounds. And they're sounds that are... royalty, like, they're not copyrighted, so we can use
them. Okay.
Yeah. Now, so that's how it plays in today.
If I don't know it, can I intentionally be ridiculous to make him laugh and mess up?
Make him laugh. Sure, if you want to. All right. So I guess the question, who would like to go first?
Johnston can go first. He's Johnston the guest. Go
first. Okay, Johnston. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
This is your first series of sounds. Play them once more.
That's scary.
Sounds like footsteps. The first sound.
Mm-hmm. I can't confirm until... Yeah.
The second sound sounds like the turning on of a lamp. Oh, no. Not really. But third sound is definitely the shaking of a bag, maybe dog food, which would be fitting for the animals in this house.
So your final answers?
Yes, those are my final answers.
We are 0 of 3. Patty G, I'll play them for you.
Okay.
Once more.
Okay.
And you'll have to guess. You have an opportunity to get points here.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking too, is that it sounds almost as if they're like going up, like up or down some stairs. And then I think they're turning on like a chain light.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like it's the light bulb and the chain you pull on it. And then it does sound like a bag, like you're shaking it in the pantry or something. I guess I pictured Cheetos for some reason. I don't know what else it would be, so I'm going to...
Okay.
Even though it's very similar, I'm going to say the same.
So... The manner in which you said the bag is being shaken, that is correct. So you each receive a point. You each receive 1 point. I will now tell you what the sounds were.
Okay.
So the first sound is a hand hitting a sofa cushion.
Oh.
The second sound is a hole punch.
Oh.
And then the third sound is a popcorn bag being shaken.
Oh. Okay, yeah, I can hear popcorn, yeah.
Okay. So round one, we're one apiece.
Okay.
Patrick, it is now your turn.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Here are your series of sounds. Once more.
Okay. Okay. The first sound is now I'm trying to remember what order it went in. I think the first sound is someone turning a page.
That is correct.
Okay. And then the second sound... It's like, dun, 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 dun. Oh, yes, I had a good idea in my head. Now I forget what I was thinking. Okay, I'm going to come back to that one. The last one sounds like they're in a warehouse or something. It sounds like they're rolling something, like they took something off the shelf and they start rolling it. My first thought is a luggage, because that's what I would think that would roll, or like a hotel cart.
That is correct.
Oh, it's a hotel cart?
It's luggage.
Oh, it's luggage. Okay, okay. Okay. Oh, man, what was the second one? I had such a good idea. Am I allowed to listen one more time or no? Okay. Oh, man, I'm so mad because I remember... I forget what I was thinking. I was like, oh, yeah.
This one is pretty tough.
Okay. I'm going to be so mad, but I'm going to pass because I can't remember what I was thinking.
Okay. Johnson, would you like opportunity to steal here?
Steal sound number two?
Yeah, I'll play it for you one more time.
All right.
So the first and the last sound he got. You're focusing on the middle sound, okay? Okay?
Oh, I remember now. Yeah, after I heard it, I remember what I was thinking.
to the sound of scissors cutting paper.
Is that your final answer?
Listen again.
You got it. I'll only play it once. For a steal.
For a steal. It is the sound of Dale's absence from this room. And our souls are a little less. For without him, we have been cut to pieces. That is my final answer.
Close. It's an empty sanitizer pump being pumped.
Okay, that's annoying. That's so specific.
I would have accepted pumping.
Okay. I was gonna say scissors though. So I would have gotten it wrong anyway.
Patty G went up. He's up 5-1. Johnston, you have an opportunity here on this next round. All right, you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. Here are your sounds. One more time. Are you ready?
Ready. Number one is tearing cloth. Sounds like ripping pants. My worst nightmare. Number two is shopping carts. Sounds like they're being pushed into the corral.
That is correct. The manner in which, number one, you said, something is being ripped. So you received 1 point for that. So, Patty, you can steal that one.
Okay.
And then what is the last one?
The last one is what it sounds like when you have to clean up after your dogs. That's what it is.
I don't know what that means, but there's a lot of sounds that happen when that happens.
I'm just throwing out some of the ridiculous stuff.
Patty?
Okay.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Only once for the steal now, okay?
Okay, the last one, it sounds like one of those, it sounds like a jar. It sounds like one of those pop jars that like open up.
That's correct.
Okay. And then the first one, something tearing. I mean, he said cloth, so I'm like, if it's not cloth, I would assume paper. Is it like a check? No?
Incorrect. Johnston, you received that point. It was tape.
Tape. I almost said Velcro. Or I was going to say Velcro before you said tear.
So, Johnston, you got 4 points there, and then Patty got 2. So, it's 7-5.
Nice.
Patty's up by 2. Patty, it is your turn. Are you ready for the last round?
Yeah.
The last round. That's not the sound I wanted there, but
you're going dumb, Patrick.
Here we go. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Once more.
Okay, first one, dropping a rock into the water. Second one, bouncing a basketball. Third one, what did I think it was? That's my problem. I keep forgetting. Oh my goodness. I can't even remember the sound now. Dang it. I keep forgetting the stupid sounds. I almost said the last one too first, so I wouldn't forget.
Like I said, one of them is very hard. It's meant to be.
So okay.
It's meant to be. Sort of the swing one.
I can't remember what I was thinking.
Okay. So, no on the first one.
Okay.
The manner in which the sound happened on the second one you got.
Oh, wait. Can I guess the third one? I remembered.
Okay, yeah.
Is it someone chewing food?
Incorrect.
Okay.
So, you received 1 point.
Okay.
Johnson, you can steal here.
The first sound.
I'll play it one more time for you.
I can guess that. I can guess it without listening to it.
Well, let me just play it one more time. Right. Or you want to wait till you get to the other for me to play it?
Yeah. Go ahead and play it one more time.
Okay.
First one is the sound of water balloons being smashed against the concrete.
Correct.
Yeah. I knew it was something about water.
tied up.
So, and he got number two, correct? So I can't steal that one, or can I?
He got the manner in which the sound is happening. Bouncing. Of something. The what was the wrong part.
It's not a basketball. It's kind of one of the way I picture it, it's one of those large balls that kids would play with in the park. But I can't think of the name of it. It's just having like a large ball, not like a kickball. But
how large? Like larger than a kickball?
Larger than a kickball. And I can hear birds chirping in the background.
Well, I wouldn't take mind to any of like the background stuff.
Yeah.
Just so, do you know what type of ball you're trying to guess?
Something like a medicine ball is what I'm thinking of. Something of that size.
That's correct. It's the yoga. The medicine balls.
Oh yeah. I knew it didn't sound like basketball, but that's all I could think of. That makes sense. Yeah.
So, Dawson, you won, but if you want to guess the last one, you're welcome to.
That is the sound of my shame being whisked away very slowly.
Hey! Very nice. That one was the sound of a toy tricycle.
What?
A toy tricycle, like a, you know, the kid's tricycle with the little...
Can you play it again?
Yeah. So that's the water balloon on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is the yoga ball. This is pedaling a tricycle.
Oh.
One of the toy ones with the little things inside of them. Little shaker.
Come play with us, Danny.
Yeah. Johnston is the winner. 8-7. Nice try, Patty.
That's close.
Well, Johnston, we've loved having you on, man. It was very informative. Thank you so much for coming out. Go ahead and plug everything that you have.
Thank you for having me. You can't find me on social media, but you can find my music project, Dearest Estrella, on Bandcamp. David here produced the demo EP that's on there. The rest of the stuff is stuff I wrote during my law school days, recorded on my phone. So enjoy that. You can find the publication at Northwestern Journal. And, find me on LinkedIn. That's about it.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next time.
Follow us at successfully_unsigned.
Yes.